revise this chapter 12.3 Bhumi Gita. So here in the 12.2 at the end, Sukadeva Goswami said how foolish people are trying to control the earth. So the topic related to that is Mother Bhumi's lamentation. So Bhumi, Mother Bhumi, in the first 13 verses we have Bhumi Gita. Mother Earth is lamenting that all these kings are like playthings in the hands of death, but they are desiring to conquer me. But their pleasure is like fleeting, like bubbles on the foam of water. So first they want to control their mind and senses, and eventually their ministers, advisors, citizens, etc. And they can to try to control me, right? But they cannot see that death is approaching them. And they want to conquer the land, then they want to enter the sea and take their ornaments.
That is very understandable. Generally, because people like to have more freedom, more and more freedom. But as well as the keepers of my elephants, he says, why Prabhu? Because keepers of elephant mouth is not a very big man. The keeper of elephant, isn't it? Because others like advisors, a king may be unruly and may not want to take good advice of a counselor or advisor. He may want to act a bit independently. No? Similarly, some kings are arrogant kings. They don't take any suggestions from the citizens. They want to rule over them, lord over them. So same with friends, relatives also. But why keeper of elephant is so special, I was thinking.
In Kamsa's episode, we see that Kovalya Pida was controlled by one Mahamatra. Interestingly, Kamsa narrated his entire life history to Mahamatra. How he was born of some demon, Drumila. Drumila impregnated his mother, right? So, Mahamatra is, as you said, he is not a very big thing, elephant keeper, Mahant. But Kamsa took him very seriously and then explained. And all the other people, he didn't explain so much. From Garga Samhita and some of those Harivamsa. So Kamsa's discussion with that Mahamatra is like very long, one full chapter. Probably. And Mother Earth, when she is saying, definitely she must be having, in my intuition only, must be having something in mind, some king in mind. Probably Kamsa only or someone else. Right? So elephants are like, probably the elephants are like, sometimes they, speak back. Maybe king has to gain control over them. The specific incidents are not explained in the Bhagavad. Next, she says, after conquering the land, they try to conquer the sea also to get the jewels from there. And many great men came, they entered the world and they left the world also very helplessly. So materialistic people, they want to conquer their sons or fathers or brothers and then somehow enjoy wealth. Right? And political leaders, they challenge each other. And they attack each other's lands and they want to gain control over that land. And she enumerates so many kings, some good kings, some bad kings also. And ultimately she says, whether good king or bad king, he cannot have hold on me for permanently. Right? So that's how Bhumi Gita is concluded. Then Sukadeva Goswami says, I have spoken to you the narrations of so many kings, but the ultimate purpose of all the narrations of these kings is not their political things or details, but I want to teach you jnana, vijnana and vairagya, realization and renunciation. That is the purpose of speaking about so many kings. And many of them are king, devotees of Krishna. And by hearing about the devotees of Krishna, one will develop bhakti. So if you desire bhakti, you should hear Harikatha constantly. Abhikshnam. And Nityam. Nityam means regularly, Abhikshna means constantly. On a regulated basis, you hear Bhagavatam and constantly throughout the day you remember, recollect what you have heard. Then Parikshit asks questions. Please speak about the contamination of how people in Kali Yuga can get rid themselves of the contamination, then speak about different yugas and their qualities and the inhalations, how they are destroyed in the moments of time. So Sukadeva Goswami speaks about the qualities of Satya Yuga, Trita Yuga, Dwapara Yuga and Kali Yuga, and the qualities of those people and the effects of different modes on those yugas by the power of time. So that is the theme of these chapters. Sukadeva Goswami elaborately describes the Kali Yuga qualities, right? Some general characteristics about ashramas, about women, about businessmen, about servants, about masters, then married men, then about religion, then about many other degraded qualities of fearfulness, short-sightedness, etc. And how people are greedy for wealth, how they don't protect the dependents, they are just dedicated to belly and genitals. And after describing in detail the qualities of Kali Yuga, he discusses the potency of holy name, right? Well, at the time of death, if someone takes the holy name of the Lord, so he will be attaining ultimate perfection, right? Therefore, one should always worship the Lord, right? Dedicate one's activities to the Lord. Then the potency of the holy name is that just like fire is purified, fire purifies gold, Vishnu purifies a devotee if the devotee meditates on Vishnu, right? And the purification that happens by Supreme Personality of Godhead, when a devotee meditates on him, is much superior to all other processes. And final instruction by Sukadeva Goswami to Parikshit is, therefore, you meditate on Lord Keshava. So, and although there are so many bad qualities of Kali Yuga, there is one good quality, Kirtana Deva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Param Rajayet. Then what we can achieve by Dhyana in Satya Yuga, what we can achieve by Yajnas in Dwapara Yuga, in Treta Yuga, what we can achieve by serving the Lord's Lotus Feet in Dwapara Yuga, we can achieve by chanting the holy names in Kali Yuga. That's how he ended. In the 12th chapter, Sukadeva Goswami speaks about four types of destruction. Sri Shuka Uvacha Kalaste Paramanvadir Dviparartha Vadhir Nrupa Kathito Yugamanamcha Srunukalpalaya Vapi.
Sukadeva Goswami said, my dear king, I have already described to you the measurement of time, beginning from the smallest fraction measured by the movement of a single atom up to the total life span of Lord Brahma. I have also discussed the measurement of the different millennium of universal history. Now hear about the time of Brahma's day and the process of annihilation.
All this he discussed in the first chapters, in 3.11, all these chapters. TLK. Now, we will recite 3.12.4.38. Go to 38th verse. Nityo naimittikas chaiva tatha prakritiko layah atyantikascha kathitah kalasya gatiridrishi.
In this way, the progress of time is described in terms of the four kinds of annihilation: continuous, occasional, elemental, and final.
So this is the summarizing verse at the end of the description of four pralayas. So we just decided in the beginning. There are four types of pralayas. So one is naimittika, or occasional pralaya. So this is called partial annihilation that happens at the end of Brahmaji's day. Okay, where all the planetary systems are withdrawn into Mahavishnu's, Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu's body. This destruction happens within the universe at the end of the day of Brahma. Then second type of pralaya is prakritika pralaya. This is called elemental annihilation. This is complete pralaya where the entire cosmos, right, with all the five elements, 23 elements, so they will be withdrawn into the body of Mahavishnu. This is Karanodaka Sai Vishnu. So this Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu is connected with Naimittika Pralaya. Then Mahavishnu or Karanodaka Sai Vishnu is connected with Prakritika Pralaya, elemental. This is complete. This happens. Whole universe is over. All universes. At the end of Brahma's one day. This is at the end of Brahma's one life, full life, 100 years. Then third type of pralaya is atyantika pralaya. It's the ultimate annihilation. One day. I'm just giving a summary, Prabhu. This entire chapter is about these four only. So atyantika is ultimate annihilation. Ultimate annihilation is when the jiva's false ego is destroyed. Then the actual annihilation of his material existence will happen. Then jiva will go back to spiritual world. So in the naimittika and prakritika pralayas, false ego is not destroyed. All the elements and every details of creation are withdrawn into false ego, and that goes into pradhana, and then it goes into the Vishnu's body. And it comes out later in the next creation. Okay? But atyantika means ultimate annihilation. The last is nitya, nitya pralaya. Constantly pralaya is happening, some annihilation. That happens at every moment. Right? There are six transformations of a living entity. We may not perceive it, right? But some destruction is constantly happening. Something is deteriorating. Everything is deteriorating in the material world. So this is a summary of entire chapter. Now we will proceed from second verse. From second verse till fourth verse, naimittika or occasional annihilation is described. Okay, second verse. Chaturyuga sahasram tu brahmano dinamuchyate sakalpo yatra manavah chaturdasha visham pate.
1,000 cycles of the four ages constitute a single day of Brahma, known as a kalpa. In that period, O King, 14 Manus come and go.
Next. Tadante pralayastavan.
Tadante
pralayastavan. Brahmiratri udahrita. Trayoloka ime tatra. Kalpante pralayayahi.
After one day of Brahma, annihilation occurs during his night, which is of the same duration. At that time, all the three planetary systems are subject to destruction.
Here, one more thing. I'm expecting one question here. So although some details are not very clear, but I did some research and then found some details. But here, one kalpa is equal to one Brahma's day is called one kalpa. It's equal to 1,000 chaturyugas. In that chaturyugas, there are 14 manus. So each manu will get 71 divyayugas approximately, right? So that is clear. Second, third is the night is also of the same duration as the day. So in that, annihilation of all three worlds will happen. This means that if you remember, the fire of sankarshan would just burn everything, right? At the end of Brahmaji's day, after the 1,000 yoga cycles, right? So it is popularly known that it burns only up to Maharloka, and beyond that it's not gone. But there are references saying that, especially I was recollecting that 3.8, where Brahmaji's, where creation happened. So Brahmaji came out of the navel, came out of the lotus of the universe, right? From Garbhodak Sai Vishnu's navel, universal lotus came. On top of it, Brahma took birth. If Brahma Loka is there, then why Brahma has to take birth? First question. Then, if the top four planets are not annihilated, so if the top four planetary systems are not annihilated in this partial destruction, why Brahma had to create them again? It is said in the third canto, 8th chapter, that Brahma first divided this universal lotus into three parts, then into 14 parts, not 10 parts. 14 parts means the top four also are created again. So at the end of this day of Brahma, All the 14 planetary systems are absorbed into Garbhodaksai Vishnu's body. All the living entities enter his body along with their subtle karmas. All the elements in their subtle forms enter into Garbhodaksai Vishnu's body. So the Sankarsana's fire may reach only up to Swarloka. Okay, then at this time the top planetary system, they feel the heat. The Janaloka, Maharloka, Tapoloka, they feel the heat and then they go to the upper planetary systems and all of them culminate in Satyaloka. So fire may not reach there, but the heat of fire will reach there. Okay, they will feel and they will go to Brahmaloka. But ultimately when Garbhodaksai Vishnu is withdrawing all these details of the creation, he withdraws those four planets also. It's not that they were readily available after the end of Brahmaji's night. Brahma had to create them again, according to 3.8. And in second canto, 6th chapter, 11th purport, Prabhupada writes that at this time of partial dissolution, partial annihilation, all the 14 planetary systems and all their jivas, they are withdrawn into Garbhodaksai Vishnu's body, including Brahmaloka. 2611. I think I wrote 2611, correct. Purport. And there could be many other references also, but it's not that those three are not withdrawn. It's very clear in the main Bhagavatam text itself that Brahma has to create them again. If they were already existing, why he has to create them again? They may not be burnt like the lower planetary systems, but they are withdrawn. So this is reconciliation from other things. We can enhance our understanding. there is more to learn. Then fourth, topic change is, he first said about time, right? I have already discussed about timings of different yugas. Now, here the process of annihilation that happens by time. Why this annihilation is happening? Because of the course of time of 1,000 yuga cycles have ended. And another important connection for this chapter is, in the midst of so many such, four types of annihilation are mentioned, in the midst of so many types of annihilation and all these details of creation, one king leaving his body is such an insignificant detail. My dear Parikshit Maharaj, don't be overwhelmed by it. So Sukadeva Goswami wanted to give that message. Then fourth verse we didn't read. Yeshanaimittika proktaha pralayo yatra vishvasruk shetenantasano vishvam atmasat kritya chatma bhuhu.
This is called the naimittika or occasional annihilation, during which the original creator Lord Narayana lies down upon the bed of Anantashesha and absorbs the entire universe within himself while Lord Brahma sleeps.
Brahma sleeps in the body of Garbhodaksai Vishnu. He absorbs entire universe within himself. Okay. Next, that is the description of Naimittika Pralaya. Now, this is occasional annihilation. Then from 5th verse till 22nd verse, we will have Prakritika Pralaya or elemental annihilation. Means all the elements are withdrawn, entire cosmos. This happens at the end of the life of Brahma. Dviparardhe tvatikrante Brahmana parameshtinah tata prakritaya sapta kalpante pralayayavai.
When the two halves of the lifetime of Lord Brahma, the most elevated created being, are complete, the seven basic elements of creations are annihilated.
According to Chakravarti Pada, these seven basic elements are Mahatattva, Ahankara and Tanmatras, five Tanmatras. Sixth, Esha Prakritiko Rajan pralayoyatra liyate andakoshastu sanghato vighata upasadite.
O king, upon the annihilation of the material elements, the universal egg comprises the elemental amalgamation of creation is confronted with destruction.
So the universal egg itself that have formed because of elemental amalgamation, right? Elements combined. What did we learn in 3.5, third kind of fifth chapter? So the entire creation chart is there, and 23 elements came. I think that I got the slide also. Yeah, this one. So we have this creation chart where 23 elements were there. So the deities of these elements were praying to Lord Mahavishnu. So please, we are unable to perform our services of creation because we are not mixed with each other. Just imagine, earth, water, fire, air, ether, they are separately existing. In this one body, earth, water, fire, air, ether, all five elements are there. But at that time, all were separately existing. All these bodies were not like this. So the deities, the predominating deities of all these 23 elements offered prayers to Mahavishnu, and Lord had sent his Kala Shakti or Bibhrat Shakti. That is called cohesive energy. So when the energy of cohesion entered these elements, they all started mixing with each other. Amalgamation happened. Then the universe details manifested, Virat Purusha, and all this will manifest. So now that amalgamation will get dismantled. So the opposite process of creation will happen in this Prakritika Pralaya. Elemental annihilation. All the elements will be withdrawn. Next. So that is the elemental annihilation. But how actually it will happen, the process of annihilation is elaborately described by Sukadeva Goswami from 7 to 13. So how the fire will come and burn, and the rains will come, and water will come, all this is described. Please read the translation of 7th verse.
As annihilation approaches, O king, there will be no rain upon the earth for 100 years. Drought will lead to famine, and the starving populace will literally consume one another. The inhabitants of the earth, bewildered by the force of time, will gradually be destroyed.
Then 8th also. Do you know the process is mentioned?
The sun, in its annihilating form, will drink up with its terrible rays all the water of the ocean, all living bodies, and of the earth itself. But the devastating sun will not give any rain in return.
This again proves that how this world is temporary. So Sukadeva Goswami is trying to remove any slightest trace of attachment that might exist in Parikshit Maharaj. It doesn't exist in Parikshit Maharaj because he was ready to give up his life even before he met Sukadeva Goswami also. He was not attached to any of this kingdom. He said, Tammopayatam pratiyantu vipra gangacha devi dhrta chitta mishe. So let the Takshaka bird come and bite me, no problem. Okay. Gayata Vishnu Gatha. He just recited the glories of Lord Hari, Lord Vishnu. He said like that. So, but Sukadeva Goswami is giving all these details because he is an ideal spiritual master. This is how a spiritual master would train the disciple, and through his disciple, entire world. So this annihilation he is describing to induce. To remove any trace of attachment. So we can take the principle that this whole world is so temporary, that is described by him, so how everything will be dried up at the end of this creation. But we can use the temporary to get some eternal benefit, to get some real benefit. So anything in this world should be converted to spiritual credits. So if it is so temporary, understanding the temporariness of this material world, one way is to just be detached from it completely. But an intelligent person will utilize his temporary stay in this temporary world to get some eternal benefit. That is Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga is for intelligent people.
like that.
Now, in the ninth verse, we see that a great fire of annihilation will flare up from the mouth of Lord Sankarsana. Carried by the almighty force of the wind, this fire will burn throughout the universe, scorching the lifeless cosmic shell. So Sankarsana's fire will emanate and come. In fifth canto, Prabhupada would write, why Sankarsana is emanating that fire from his mouth? Because at the time of every, the purpose of every creation is to give another chance to the conditioned soul to connect to Krishna consciousness and eventually go back to Godhead. Right? If the conditioned soul doesn't utilize that opportunity, Sankarsana would become angry. This is the angry period. Okay? So he would burn away everything. Then again he becomes very compassionate in the next creation and he creates again. Bhutva bhutva praliyate. So Lord is very merciful, but he punishes the living entity when it is required. So mercy doesn't mean no punishment. No punishment is mercy. That is not the right understanding of being merciful. So Lord will mercifully punish for the rectification of the conditioned soul. So when there is a combination of mercy and punishment, then the actual upliftment of a soul will happen. That's why Mahavishnu has four hands. Shankha, Chakra, Gada, Padma. Right? Shankha and Padma are mercy. Right? Gada and Chakra are for punishment. Right? So punishment and mercy. It's a combination. When there is a combination of Brahman and Kshatriya, then the society will run properly. So what is it? Gadadhar Gaurava. Hare Krishna. Next, 10th verse. Please read.
Burned from all sides, from above by the blazing sun and from below by the fire of Lord Sankarsana, the universal sphere will glow like a burning ball of cow dung.
Next.
A great and terrible wind of destruction will begin to blow for more than 100 years and the sky covered with dust will turn grey.
You make cow dung cakes. This is cow dung ball. Next.
After that, O King, groups of multicolored clouds will gather, roaring terribly with thunder, and will pour down floods of rain for 100 years.
See this creation chart? The reverse process of this creation will happen now. You can just relate to each of those boxes. Go ahead.
At that time, the shell of the universe will fill up with water, forming a single cosmic ocean.
Next.
As the entire universe is flooded, the water will rob the earth of its unique quality of fragrance, and the element earth, deprived of its distinguishing quality, will be dissolved.
So earth will be deprived of smell, okay, and it will be dissolved, and it will merge into the previous, next one, next.
The element fire then seizes the taste from the element water, which, deprived of its unique quality, taste, merges into fire. Air seizes the form inherent in fire, and then fire, deprived of form, merges into air. The element ether seizes the quality of air, namely touch, and then air enters into ether. Then, O King, false ego in ignorance seizes sound, the quality of ether.
So all began with sound. So all these are, just change the direction of the arrow mark everywhere. That is a destruction chart. We have creation chart, this will become destruction chart. Yeah, sound will just merge into this ignorance, false ego.
False ego in the mode of passion takes hold of the senses, and false ego in mode of goodness absorbs the demigods. Then the total Mahatattva seizes false ego along with its various functions, and that Mahatattva is seized by the three basic modes of nature, goodness, passion and ignorance. My dear King Parikshit, these modes are further overtaken by the original unmanifest form of nature, impelled by time. That unmanifest nature is not subject to the six kinds of transformation caused by the influence of time. Rather, it has no beginning and no end. It is the unmanifest, eternal, and infallible cause of creation.
Yes. Now, in the 20th and 20, the six kinds of transformation mentioned here, that is Janma, Astitva, Vriddhi, Parinama, Apakshaya, Mrityu. Six transformations that the human body might undergo, or any body. So, how this Prakriti has, here in this set of verses, it is said that Prakriti doesn't have all these transformations. Right? Modes are not very active there. So now, how Prakriti has no such transformations is explained in 20 and 21 verses. Read.
In the unmanifest stage of material nature, called Pradhana, there is no expression of words, no mind, and no manifestation of the subtle elements beginning from the Mahat, nor are there the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. There is no life here or intelligence, nor any senses or demigods. There is no definite arrangement of planetary systems, nor are there present the different stages of consciousness, sleep, wakefulness, and deep sleep. There is no either water, earth, air, fire, or sun. The situation is like that of an complete sleep or of voidness. Indeed, it is indescribable. Authorities in spiritual science explain, however, that since Pradhan is the original substance, it is actual basis of material creation.
So the qualities of Pradhan, unmanifest nature, are described like this. All are knows only. No expression of words, no manifestation of elements, no life air, no intelligence, no senses, no demigods, no planets, no consciousness, no stages of consciousness. Although there are, it doesn't, it is not described to have any of these details of creation. But it is the basis of, actual basis of material creation. It is a seed from which everything is coming. Now within that seed everything is getting retracted now. 22nd verse says, this is the inhalation called Prakritika, or the natural, or elemental, during which the energies belonging to the Supreme Person and His unmanifest material nature, disassembled by the force of time, are deprived of their potencies and merged together totally. So this is the second type of annihilation. First is naimittika, occasional. Second is elemental, prakritika or elemental. Now 23rd verse onwards we have atyantika or ultimate annihilation. This is quite technical. First Sukadeva Goswami brings us to the point that how false ego is not destroyed in these two types of annihilation, and false ego is the root cause of this material existence. If one destroys that root cause of material existence, false ego, then this ultimate annihilation will happen.
Brahma's day, that Garbhodakshay Vishnu, it takes back the whole creation, and after that Prakritika also Karandakshay Vishnu takes, Mahavishnu takes it back. So that means whole universes, all the universes will destroy that time.
For every universe there is an elemental annihilation, Prakritika annihilation. Whenever it happens, Mahavishnu withdraws it. Whether all universes will come simultaneously or one after another, all that.
But as we hear that when Mahavishnu...
When Mahavishnu breathes out, all universes all will come out. If all are coming out at the same time, it will all there. But some universes, Brahma has 1,000 heads.
Yeah.
Maybe it's larger. We don't know. They are not mentioned. But for each universe, this is what is the process. Yes, 23rd. बुद्धिन्द्रियार्थरूपेण ज्ञानं भातिताश्रयं दृश्यत्वाव्यतिरेकाभ्यां आद्यन्तवदवस्तु यत्.
It is the absolute truth alone who manifests in the forms of intelligence, the senses and the objects of sense perception, and who is their ultimate basis. Whatever has a beginning and end is insubstantial because of being an object perceived by limited senses and because of being non-different from its own cause.
So Chakravarti Pad very nicely explains these verses with using the terms Parinamavada, Vivartavada, Arambhavada, all this. Shall we discuss all those also? But the theme is false, as I said, false ego is the root cause of material existence, and one has to destroy it. Then only atyantika, ultimate annihilation will happen. Now, the different concepts that are explained to bring to this point that false ego is not destroyed is one is the non-difference aspect of cause and effect. Supreme Lord is the cause, universe is the effect. This is the first topic. They are not different. So as earlier we said, there are Bhedavakyas and Abhedavakyas. So this is like Abhedavakya. Cause and effect are non-different. Now absolute truth is the ultimate basis of all these elements. So, and they have a beginning and an end. Just now we have seen in elemental creation, so elemental annihilation. So they have a beginning that is called creation. They have an ending that is called destruction. Right? So whatever is having a beginning and an end, it is insubstantial. Right? And it is limited by the senses, but non-different from the source. So they may have beginning and end, the cause, the effect may have a beginning and an end, but because they are coming from an ultimate cause, their cause is permanent, they are also considered non-different from the permanent. Right? So this universe, all these elements, they are not different from Supreme Lord, who is the cause of all these effects. Simple thing. A earring is there, or a bracelet is there. They are non-different from their source, gold. Pot is there, or some other thing which is made of earthen material. Clay pot is there. They are not non-different from earth or clay. Right? Similarly, the universe is non-different from Supreme Lord. See how different examples. He gives some 3-4 analogies to prove that the cause is non-different from effect. 24th. Deepaschakshuscha rupamcha jyotishona prithak bhaved evam dhikhani matrascha nasyur anyatamadrita.
Lamp, the eye that views by the light of that lamp, and the visible form that is viewed are all basically non-different from the element fire. In the same way, intelligence, the senses and the sense perceptions have no existence separate from the supreme reality, although that absolute truth remains totally distinct from them.
So there is an analogy given here. There is lamp and there are eyes. Eyes will be able to see an object or the form of the object only because of the light of the lamp. But if you understand, this lamp, these eyes and the form of this object are all coming from sun. They are all, what to say, the expansions are different forms of sun only. Without sun, all these are not existent. In that sense, all these are non-different from sun. Or fire, the element of fire. Then intelligence, senses and sense perceptions are all coming from absolute truth. But they are all coming from absolute truth. So they don't have existence separate from absolute truth. So they are non-different from absolute truth. Just like I, the object and the lamp are non-different from the element fire, Similarly, intelligence, senses and sense perceptions are non-different from the absolute truth. Yet, fire or sun, they exist separately from these three objects. Similarly, absolute truth remains totally distinct from these objects, intelligence or senses or sense perceptions. Right? So they are non-different. The source is non-different from the effect. At the same time, source exists separately from the effect. That point is established. 25th. Buddher jagaranam swapnah susiptir iti chochyate maya matram idam rajan nanatvam pratyagatmani.
The three states of intelligence are called waking consciousness, sleep and deep sleep. But my dear king, the variegated experiences created for the pure living entity by these different states are nothing more than illusion.
So there are different stages called Jagrati, Swapna and Sushupti. Dream state, wake up state and deep sleep state. So all these are different states of consciousness or intelligence, right? And living entity has various experiences in all these three states. But they are all illusion. Right? Because he is experiencing all of them in a conditioned state, that's why they are all illusion. What he experiences in a state which is beyond these three, that is Turiya, that is real. Whatever he experiences in these three are under the jurisdiction of modes and they are illusory and temporary. In that sense, they are false also. Right? So, just like darkness vanishes in the presence of light, these three stages of consciousness, which are manifested by mode of passion, goodness and ignorance, they will vanish in the presence of Krishna consciousness. So, light is compared to Krishna consciousness, darkness is compared to these three stages of consciousness, Jagrat, Swapna and Sushupti. Next. 26th verse. Yatha jaladhara yomni bhavanti na bhavanti cha brahmanidam tatha vishvam avayavyupayapyavat.
Just as clouds in the sky come into being and are then dispersed by the amalgamation and dissolution of their constituent elements, this material universe is created and destroyed within the absolute truth by the amalgamation and dissolution of its elemental constituent parts.
Here, the sky is compared to the Supreme Lord. And clouds are compared to the universe. In the sky, clouds appear and disappear. Sometimes they appear, sometimes they disappear. Similarly, within this absolute truth, Supreme Personality of Godhead, sometimes the universe appears and it disappears, right? It appears when all the details appear, when all the 23 elements get amalgamated, okay, 23 elements have emanated from his body, they get amalgamated and all the details of creation manifest and they go inside him also. So that is mentioned here, 26th verse. Next. This is the summary from 23 to 26. Okay, this is about the non-difference of cause and effect. So, absolute truth is the basis of intelligence, senses and sense objects. So, this is in that way, they are all these products of absolute truth are non-different from the absolute truth. So, this is explained with the examples of how I, object and a lamp are non-different from the element fire. Object means here form of the object. You are able to see the form of an object only because of the presence of element fire. Object means not exactly this jug, the form of the object. You see, I think form is a better word than object. Rupam, the form of an object. So experiences created by Jagrati, Swapna, Sushupti are all illusion. Then clouds appear and disappear within the sky and universe is created or destroyed within the absolute truth. Then another important section from 27th is Arambhavada. Arambhavada means there is a beginning for all these elements, right? That is Supreme Lord. So that Arambha or the cause is non-different from the effect. So every effect will have a cause, right? So it has a beginning. So that is called Arambha. 27th. Can someone read the translation directly?
My dear King, it is stated in the Vedanta Sutra that the ingredients cause that constitute any manifested product in this universe can be perceived as a separate reality, just as the threads that make up a cloth can be perceived separately from their product.
So there are different threads, they form together, the horizontal threads and vertical threads form together a cloth. So cloth has its independent existence. At the same time, we can perceive the threads, horizontal and vertical threads, when we zoom into it. Right? So the threads of the cloth are compared to the universal ingredients. And this cloth is compared to the universe. Right? So here the point is, this universal ingredients will have a separate existence within the universe. Definitely universal ingredients only are forming the universe. At the same time, the universal ingredients also exist as separate entities, okay, separate units. 28th verse. Yat samanya visheshabhyam upalabhyeta sabhrama anyonyapashrayat sarvam adyantavadavastuyat.
Anything experienced in terms of general cause and specific effect must be an illusion, because such causes and effects exist only relative to each other. Indeed, whatever has a beginning and an end is unreal.
This is according to Vivartavada. Arambhavada, he writes in 26th purport. Not much is mentioned there, just like one or two sentences he writes. So anything has 24th it's mentioned. Okay, we'll come back to that. That's not very needed now. So 28th is saying that whatever has a beginning and an end is unreal. So this is according to the Vivartavada. Vivartavada means it's theory of illusion. Parinamavada is theory of transformation. So now, whatever is getting transformed is the Lord's energies. So Lord is existing as a separate entity, just like fire element is existing as a separate entity compared to the form or eye or lamp. Right, fire is also existing as a separate entity. Similarly, Lord is also existing as a separate personality, and his energies are getting transformed to manifest the details of this universe. Right. So the nature of material cause cannot be perceived without perception of the effect. By seeing the effect, one will understand what is the nature of the cause. Right. So, for example, the burning nature of the fire cannot be perceived without observing the effects of the fire. Then, the saturating quality of the water cannot be understood without observing the effect, a saturated cloth or paper. The organizational power of a man cannot be understood without observing the effect of his dynamic work, Prabhupada, namely a solid institution. Right? The effects will give an understanding of how potential is the cause. Okay? With these three examples, they are making this point. Now, in this way, not only do effects depend on their causes, but the perception of the cause also depends on the observation of the effect. This is clear? Complicated. A cause is there, it will have an effect. Right? Then, what is this? Not only do the effects depend on their causes. So, cause is producing an effect, this effect is depending on the cause, right? Without the cause, effect cannot exist, right? Now, without the effect, you cannot understand the cause also, right? Without effect, you cannot perceive the cause. Upon the observation of the effect only, one will understand, oh, this is the cause. For example, this water is there. This has the effect of wetting this whole mat. If I just pour it like this, this mat will become wet. So the cause is water. The effect is this mat becoming wet. Unless we observe the effect, we may not be able to understand that this cause, this water has this kind of effect. Right? So through the effect also, we will have an understanding of the cause. Okay? Thus, both are defined relatively and have a beginning and an end. This is very important to understand Vivartavada. Why they are confused? We are understanding it. Why they are confused? Thus, both are defined, both cause and effect are defined relatively to have a beginning and an end. The conclusion is that all such material causes and effects are essentially temporary and relative and consequently illusory. Okay. Now, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is cause of all causes. He has no beginning and an end. Now, one more derivation from here is that when an effect, there is an effect and we are trying to understand the cause, right, from based on that effect. This means that cause is depending on the effect for its understanding. Right? Now, the both are depending on each other. Cause and effect are both are depending on the each other. And both are existing as temporary. This is... Cause requires the... that is the understanding of Vivartavada. I am presenting the confusion that they are having. That's why we are getting confused. We have certain understanding. So they think that because this cause is there, this effect is... this cause is depending on this effect for its explanation. So this cause also must be temporary. Because effect is existing as temporary. Unless we see the effect, we cannot understand the cause. Means cause also must be temporary, right? This effect is effect. We definitely understand that it is temporary. So that means, that would mean that cause also is temporary. So when Vyasadeva says this material world is an expansion of Krishna or is non-different from Krishna, or this first 3-4 verses that we discussed about the non-difference of cause and effect. So when we say that cause and effect are non-different, that would mean that the temporariness of the effect would mean that cause is also temporary. So supreme absolute truth cannot be temporary. It is permanent. Right? But understand, if we accept this logic of non-difference between cause and effect, then we have to understand that the cause, absolute truth, is also temporary. Right? So whatever effect we see is only an illusion. It has no factual existence. Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya. That is Vivartavada. Vivartavada is understanding the temporary nature of the effect, right, extrapolating that cause is also temporary. But they accept that absolute truth is not temporary, it is permanent. But if you explain that this world and that are non-different, then that would mean that absolute truth is temporary, so there is a mistake with your earlier explanation of the non-difference between cause and effect. It's not existing only. It's false, totally false. It's totally illusion. That's what they say. Like that. But our understanding of Parinamavada is there is a beginning, that is cause, and it is causing this effect means the cause is not getting transformed into the effect. It is causing the transformation through the energy. Like that. That is our understanding. That's why the... Also that
this parasamani is given.
Touchstone. Correct. That comes in CC also. So if the material object can transform, touchstone can transform the objects it touches into gold. If a material effect without himself getting transformed, touchstone is not getting transformed, but all the objects are getting transformed. So that's why this beautiful point is mentioned. Absolute, you see that last line of 24th translation? Absolute truth remains totally distinct from them. There are so many causes, so many effects, but absolute truth will remain distinct from them. So, according to Vivartavad, they think that absolute truth is getting transformed. If we accept this theory of non-difference of cause and effect, then we have to accept that absolute truth is getting transformed. But absolute truth can cause an effect, but it can remain intact. Then 29th verse. Read the translation.
Just as clouds in the sky, although perceived, the transformation of even a single atom of material nature has no ultimate definition without reference to the Supreme Soul. To be accepted as factually existing, something must possess the same quality as pure spirit, eternal, unchanging existence.
Even atom has ultimate definition only in reference to the Supreme Soul. Only those possessing the quality of pure spirit can be accepted as factually existing. So we accept the connection between every object, every element, every atom with the Supreme Lord. Right? They deny that connection. Absolute truth has to exist separately. Whatever you see is illusion. That is Vivartavad. Right? But we understand everything is a transformation of Lord's energy. It has its source in the Lord. So that connection we see. There's another beautiful example, mirage. So I think we didn't take it 13. This is next. So in the 29th purport, there is a example of mirage. Now there is sun. It is a source of light. Right? Next, because of that light, in a desert we will see water. That is called mirage. If we see water in a desert, that is not water. That is only a mirage, right? Because of certain transformation of the light, that sand is appearing as water, right? Water is real, light is real, but because of certain transformation of that light, sand, which is real, is appearing as a water, which is another real object, right? But the appearance of sand as water is unreal, right? So a mirage of water appearing in the desert is actually a manifestation of light. The false appearance of water is a specific transformation of light. Right? That which falsely appears as independent material nature is similarly a transformation of Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is Parinamvad, correct. So material nature is the external potency of the Lord. Right? So material world is a transformation of Lord's energy. Not Lord. Lord is not losing his individual existence by manifesting this material world. That is the point. Just like sun is producing light, okay, so that is his energy. And that energy is causing this transformation of the sand into water. Right? But sun is not losing its existence. Because his energy, light, is transforming in certain way to produce this effect of water in the mirage, in the desert. So we might get confused, right? Oh, this water is there. This is actually illusion, right? So mirage of water appearing in the desert. Okay. Next, 30th verse.
No material duality in the absolute truth. The duality perceived by an ignorant person is like the difference between the sky contained in an empty pot and the sky outside the pot, or the difference between the reflection of the sun in water and the sun itself in the sky, or the difference between the vital air within one living body and that within another body.
So unless the sun is there, its reflection cannot exist. Unless there is ether in this entire atmosphere, that ether cannot enter the pot. Right? So in that sense, when you break the pot, the ether inside the pot mixed with the ether outside the pot. Right? So the ether inside and outside the pot are same. Right? The life air within our body and another person's body is also the same. Right? All are having their source in one object. Right? That is element air or element ether. So that's why there is no material duality in the absolute truth. This water example is sun is reflected in the water, right? The light and the shining that we see in the water is only because of the sun, presence of the sun. Similarly, the ether which is present inside the pot is only because of the ether outside the pot, right? So there is no material duality. According to Chakravartipada and other acharyas, these two are non-different. The reflection in water's body, reflection of sun in a water body is non-different from the sun. The presence of ether within the water pot and outside the water pot are non-different. Like that. Cause and effect are non-different. Like that. Next. Gold and appear. Gold and gold ornaments. Read the 31st verse.
Their difference purposes. Men utilize gold in various ways, and gold is therefore perceived in various forms. In the same way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is inaccessible to material senses, is described in various terms, both ordinary and Vedic, by different types of men.
So gold, the object, the material gold will transform into bracelets or earrings or necklaces, etc. It appears in different forms. Similarly, when the Lord is described by different people in different ways, he will also be perceived differently by different people. Right? Supreme Lord is compared to gold. So all those who are not devotees of Supreme Lord are basically trying to exploit the Lord and his energies. According to their strategy of exploitation, they conceive of and describe the absolute truth in various ways. Okay? But in Gita and Bhagavatam, absolute truth presents himself as if he actually is for the benefit of sincere people who are not foolishly trying to conceptually manipulate the Supreme Lord. Okay, this is all manipulation. Next. Next read. 32, sorry.
Although a cloud is a product of the sun and is also made visible by sun, it nevertheless creates darkness for the viewing eye, which is another partial expansion of the sun. Similarly, material false ego, a particular product of the absolute truth, made visible by the absolute truth, obstructs the individual soul, another partial expansion of the absolute truth, from realizing the absolute truth.
So far, Sukadeva Goswami is mentioning few points. That I'll just revise whatever we have discussed in Atyantika Inhalation. First, he established the non-difference of the cause and effect. Means non-difference of Supreme Lord and the universe. Right? In few verses with some examples. Then, he discussed about some confusion that could happen because of not understanding that universe is not a transformation of the Lord, but it is caused by Lord's energy, right? It's not a transformation of the Lord, it's a transformation of Lord's energies, right? He explained that confusion a little bit. And he finally said, in 29th verse, that every single atom is connected with the Supreme Lord. It doesn't have an independent existence. It doesn't have an existence independent from the Supreme Lord, right? Then after that, he said, different people explain the Lord in different ways, because of their misconceptions. All these kind of different explanations of the Supreme Lord is only because of a cloud covering them. So here, that cloud is compared to false ego, sun is compared to absolute truth, eye is compared to jiva. If cloud is covering the eye, we cannot see the sun properly. Similarly, false ego is covering the jiva, he cannot perceive or understand the absolute truth properly. Right? He cannot understand the connection between this universe and the absolute truth properly. He cannot understand that absolute truth is the basis of this entire universe, entire creation. He cannot understand all this. That is why one has to give up this false ego. Giving up that false ego is atyantika or ultimate annihilation. This is the conclusion he brings out. Just 33 we didn't read, right? 33 you read.
The cloud originally produced from the sun is torn apart, the eye can see the actual form of the sun. Similarly, when the spirit soul destroys his material covering of false ego by inquiring into the transcendental science, he regains his original spiritual awareness.
So how to remove that false ego is mentioned here. That is by inquiring into transcendental science, by inquiring from a bona fide guru. So my dear Parikshit, I'm reading the 34th verse. When the illusory false ego that binds the soul has been cut off with the sword of discriminating knowledge, and one has developed realization of Lord Achyuta, that is called Atyantika, or ultimate annihilation of material existence. This is the final annihilation. So, even if the when the cloud is removed, then human eye can actually see. But owl's eye cannot see. An owl cannot perceive. There are some creatures, however, like owls, who are averse to seeing the sun. In the same way, those who are not interested in spiritual knowledge will not receive the privilege of seeing God. Like that. So one has to inquire into transcendental science. So is this clear or confusing or some... Now, the last pralaya, called Nitya Pralaya, or constant annihilation. Please read.
Birds, in the subtle working of nature, O subduer of the enemy, have declared that there are continuous processes of creation and annihilation that all created beings, beginning with Brahma, constantly undergo. All the material elements undergo transformation and are constantly and swiftly eroded by the mighty currents of time. Various stages of experience that material things existence that material things exhibit are perpetual causes of their generation and annihilation.
So all material entities undergo transformation. These are the transformations of Balya, Pauganda, are the six transformations that would happen. So all these stages of existence that material things exhibit are perpetual causes of their generation and annihilation. So they appear and they disappear also, but we cannot perceive it. Now somebody may question, you are saying at every moment, at every place, this annihilation is happening, this is Nitya Pralaya. Why we can't see it? So he explains that in 37 and 38 verses, 37th verse. Why we cannot perceive that kind of annihilation, although it is constantly happening. So these stages of existence created by beginningless and endless time, the impersonal representative of the Supreme Lord, are not visible. Just as the infinitesimal momentary changes of position of planets in the sky cannot be seen directly. So planets are moving, but one cannot see. One cannot perceive it. Nails are growing, one cannot perceive it. Hairs are growing, no one can perceive it. Right? But after a certain period of time, we can see, understand that, oh, this has grown so much. After 1 week, my nail has grown this big, 2 mm. Right? But now if I observe it, I don't see any movement. So it's like that. But Nitya Pralaya is happening, but we are unable to understand it. So these are the four types of pralayas. Next, in this way, the progress of time is described in terms of four kinds of annihilation. So any points or discussion in these four types of pralayas? Nitya pralaya, other three are quite straightforward, but Atyantika, false ego thing is little confusing. So that is also okay, more or less. Jiva's false identification. clouds are created by the sun in that analogy, but that false ego is created by the Lord is actually it's coming from the Lord only, but the cause of Lord's creating that false ego is the living entity's identification and desire. Living entity's desire to enjoy separately from the Lord. So, anything else? As long as false ego is there, he has to remain in the material world. When he is able to destroy that false ego by cultivating transcendental knowledge, as suggested here, then he will go out. Or he can stay here also and inspire other people to destroy that false ego. Yeah, pure devotees. Each living entity. It's individual.
That is Atyantika Pralaya for him, like this.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah, he has summarized everything. Okay. Next. 40th verse. No, 39th verse. Etah kuru sreshta jagat vidhatur. नारायणस्य अखिलसत्त्वधाम्नः लीलाकथास्ते कथितः समास्तः कार्ष्णेन नाजोऽप्यधिभूतमीशः.
O best of the Kurus, I have related to you these narrations of the pastimes of Lord Narayana, the creator of this world and the ultimate reservoir of all existence, presenting them to you only in brief summary. Even Lord Brahma himself, if he would be incapable of describing them entirely.
So I have described Lord's glories, even Brahma, in a brief way. Even Brahma also cannot describe them completely. Even Ananta Shesh, which is 1,000 months, also cannot describe completely. Still, devotees attempt to describe, because glorification of the Lord is the highest perfectional gain. Tathapi kirtayamyanga, tathamati yathashrutam. Then next verse is ekantalabham vajizhonupum sam. Sushloka maulir gudamadamahu. Samsara sindhu mati dustaramutti tirshor. Nanya plavo bhagavata purushottamasya. Leela katharasa nishevana mantarena pumso bhave dvivida dhukka duradvitasya davardvitasya.
For a person who is suffering in the fire of countless miseries and who desires to cross the insurmountable ocean of a material existence, there is no suitable boat except that of a cultivating devotion to the transcendental taste for the narrations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's pastimes.
Next, this is something like etadhyatur chittanam matrasparshechyamuhu bhavasindhu plavo. So to cross over this material ocean, one needs the suitable boat of Lord's pastimes. Right. Although it is not possible to completely describe the pastimes of the Lord, even a partial appreciation can save one from unbearable miseries of material existence. Partial appreciation. In that first canto, Saradhya Parishada Sevana Sakhyada Uttya Virasana Anugamana Stavana Pranaman. In that purport, Prabhupada writes that even if one appreciates these dealings between Lord and his devotees, one will get salvation. So Lord is playing so many roles as Arati, Parishada, Sakhya, Dautya, etc. If one appreciates, he will get salvation. Here, similarly, one may not completely describe Lord's pastimes. Partially appreciation also will give liberation from miseries of material existence. Next. Long ago, So he in 41, 42, 43, the last three verses, he gives the parampara of Bhagavatam. Naranarayan Rishi spoke to Narada Muni. Narada Muni spoke to Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva spoke to Sukadeva Goswami. Sukadeva Goswami spoke to Parikshit Maharaj. While he is speaking to Parikshit Maharaj, Sutta Goswami is also sitting there. Now Sukadeva Goswami says, this Sutta Goswami who is sitting here, in future he will speak to Savanakadi Rishis. Right? So there is a parampara of Bhagavatam. So you can read this translation.
Bhagavata Mahamuni Krite. So in CC also that Acharya has referred that Narayan Mahamuni. Narayan Mahamuni means Narayan Rishi, they are referring. In CC also and other places also they refer that the Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite. This Mahamuni refers to Narayan Rishi.
Narayan Rishi. And that Mahamuni refers to Narada Muni. That Mahamuni refers to Vyasadeva. So different devotees explain this Mahamuni in different ways. All are true.
Like the third canto, the verse comes 3.8.2 that Soham Nilam Shulla Sukhaya Dukkham.
Nahadgata Viramayatas.
Prabhartaya Bhagavatam Pran. Yadaho Shakshat Bhagavan Rishi Buddha.
Then Bhagavan is Sankarshan.
Sankarshan.
Sankarshan spoke to four sages.
Four sages. But Bhagavan Rishi Buddha, they are telling.
Bhagavan Rishibhya. Rishis are four Kumaras.
Okay.
Bhagavan is Lord Sankarshan. There one parampara comes. Right?
Maitreya Rishi's parampara, Parashar.
Maitreya
Rishi that parampara comes.
Maitreya Rishi, correct.
Parashar
Muni. Yeah, Sankhyayan Muni or Sankarshan spoke to four Kumaras. So Sanat Kumar spoke to Sankhyayan Muni. He spoke to Parashara. He spoke to Maitreya. Maitreya spoke to Vidura. That is one parampara. Okay. I have that parampara slide. 1 minute. No, not this. That is divine. So there are different paramparas mentioned in Bhagavatam. Okay. See this. Krishna as Uddhava spoke to Bhadrikashram sages. Krishna spoke to Uddhava, Uddhava spoke to Bhadrikashram sages. Krishna as Kapila spoke to Devahuti. Krishna spoke to Brahma, he spoke to Narada, Vyasa, Sukha, Suta, Savanaka. This is the line that we are going through. Right? Then Narada Muni also spoke to Dhruva Prachetas, this is also considered Bhagavatam. Then as Sankarshana, he spoke to Lord Shiva, he spoke to Sanat Kumara. Right? Then he spoke to Sankhyayan Muni, Parashara, Maitreya, Vidura. This is one parampara. Sankhyayan Muni also spoke to Brihaspati. Then as Rishabhadeva, he spoke to Navayogendras. Navayogendra spoke to Nimi. Right? Rishabhadeva spoke to Bharat and other sons. Right? Jadabharat spoke to Rogana. These are all considered different Bhagavatams. Naranarayana is not mentioned here.
The Janaloka, one of the Chatushkumar, and they referred to Narayan Rishi. Same question was asked by Narada Muni to Narayan Rishi, and he answered the questions. And they referred to that answer, and they referred to that like that. Is that
correct?
Also?
That. Inside there are so many loops. So Narayan also, the one thing is missing. We can add this to the chat. Narayan Rishi spoke to Narada Muni, and that is one line.
But the same Narada Muni also spoke to Vyasadeva and all them. So here we put that from Brahma came Narada Muni.
From Naranarayan Rishi also, we can put two boxes here and connect this both to Narada. Okay. Lakshmi, where does she come? Sri Sampradaya also there is a mention. Although it's not mentioned in Bhagavatam, Lakshmi also is like one parampara is there from Lakshmi also. Sanat Kumar Prabhu mentioned in one of the classes, Bhagavatam classes. Sri Sam. Lakshmi spoke to some sages, something like that. Brahma, Kumara, Rudra are there. Three Sampradayas. Lakshmi also will be there. Okay, Prabhu, anything else? I think we should stop. Grantharaya Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Questions? Sarad Gopal Prabhu didn't remind today. Probably said I'll refer.